Now, that's big political news, the kind we hash over on our Reporters Roundtable. Joining us today, we've got Corey Dade, the Atlanta correspondent for The Wall Street Journal, and Dominique DePrima, producer and host of the show The Front Page on KJLH in Los Angeles. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
So it's great to see you, Dominique, have you in the office. We don't work that far apart, you know, our offices, that is. So we talked a little bit about the CBC, and folks from the CBC, Congressional Black Caucus, were so scrappy during the Bush years and just really challenging the Bush agenda. But are people really ready, you think, to take on a black president?
Well, I mean, I think it's a double-edged sword. I think it's a real paradigm shift for most people who have been scrappy against the Bush agendas. What is my role now? Certainly, I would think Barbara Lee would push the envelope in terms of the peace agenda, as she has a strong record of doing so and has been well to the left of Senator Obama even on that question.
Corey, how do we measure as citizens or as journalists how, you know, organizations that have a traditional base in the black community, like the Congressional Black Caucus or the NAACP, are interacting with the president, and whether or not that they're holding the president, who is incoming, accountable?
Right. I actually wrote consistently about that throughout the campaign, and sort of Obama's relationship with traditional civil rights leaders, members of the Congressional Black Caucus, and we have to remember that many of the traditional African-American leaders, both in Congress and in the civil rights movement, were not Obama supporters. They came on late. They were pretty ardent critics of Obama through different periods. So the idea that they may, once he's elected, challenge him isn't surprising. I think the question will be how they react to what has been a clear sort of signal from the Obama campaign throughout in the past year, which is that they are trying to sort of de-racialize some of their policies, urban policies, policies that address crime, poverty, economic development. They want to, the Obama camp wants to shift the focus on many of those priorities to look at sort of the economic needs of different communities rather than sort of the traditional racially based needs, so that it may not be an NAACP or an Urban League that gets sort of the ear of the president directly. It may be sort of a broader coalition of people from Latinos to African Americans to just simply elected leaders who are able to get his ear and hopefully, impossibly, shape policy that way.
All right. I want to look at the local issues. Dominique, you're in California, and the governor has asked for some help. The budget here, not so great on the state level. I want to talk to Corey in a second about Atlanta. So there's states like California and cities like Atlanta asking, what can you guys do for us at this point? What do you think California's prospects are of getting some aid at this time where everybody's got their hand out?
Honestly, I just don't see how that's going to happen. I mean, we've got 50 states, and each one of them has a whole bunch of cities. Everybody's got their hand out, you know, and including, you know, they're competing with corporations. You know, I would love to see it happen. You know, we need the help here in California, but I don't see that happening. It reminds me of, you know, this we're too big to fail concept. California's too big to fail. But it's me, it's us. Well, sorry, everybody needs help right now, and I just don't see it happening.
Corey, we've had some really good conversations with Mayor Shirley Franklin of Atlanta, who was named, of course, one of the best mayors in the country. She seems very adamant that Atlanta should get a cut of what is, you know, people don't really know what it is becoming, but what was the financial bailout. Do you think that Atlanta or broadly cities have a shot at getting some of that money?
I don't think that's likely at this point. There's no indication that the Treasury Department and its sort of shifting priorities about how to use the money is going to do that. They are still focused on shoring up the financial industry in different ways. I think that, you know, for Mayor Franklin, Mayor Nutter, and the rest, they campaigned very strongly for Obama. They were early Obama supporters, or at least Nutter became a supporter after supporting Clinton, Hillary Clinton, during the primaries. But this is their effort to stand up and be counted. And this is kind of a this is part and parcel of most urban mayors, big city mayors, coming out and demanding infrastructure funding and revitalization. And that's something they've been doing throughout the Bush administration to no avail. And I think what will happen is that you may not see funding come out of the $700 billion bailout package, but you may see funding and other policies going to cities through stimulus packages and others once Obama takes office, because mayors in particular are poised to be a much stronger voice and have a much much greater influence on the administration through the U.S. Conference of Mayors in particular, because Obama has relied heavily on them to help shape his urban policies and to deliver votes. So I think that they will have a voice going forward, but not in this bailout.
Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, same thing. Clinton supporter, then jumped in with 2 feet, campaigned heavily for Obama. He's part of his economic advisory committee. And yet I agree. I just don't see us getting a check as much as we might need it.
All right, guys. Well, I want you to stay with us. We're going to come back to these issues of government, governance, money, all after a quick break. And just ahead, we also have how honest people are about their own racial hangups. Is the dialogue becoming more direct? We'll take a look as we continue an in-depth look at race in America. This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We're back with our Reporters Roundtable. We've got Dominique DePrima, the producer and host of the show The Front Page on KJLH in Los Angeles, and Corey Dade, Atlanta correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Let's jump right back in. And I want to go back to Prop 8. This is just the issue that will not give it up. It is, in some ways, the hottest ongoing issue in California now that the presidential race has been decided. So it banned gay marriage in California. But this week, the state Supreme Court agreed to decide if the measure was legal. The court refused to let gay marriages resume until it considers the lawsuits. Now, they could hear the case as early as March. If the measure loses the court battle, is there any place else to go? Dominique?
I would say definitely yes. I mean, you know, the argument that people against Prop 8 have made, and I think convincingly, is that, you know, many of our civil rights or rights issues would have lost in a vote. So where do they end up? They end up in court, and they end up in the streets marching and demonstrating, and the LGBT community has shown a willingness to do that, and that's what's happening. Just one quick thing that I want to say is that I think the way this has been covered, as if African Americans are as a monolith against for Prop 8, is not fair, because it hasn't been broken out in terms of age groups, which I guarantee you would paint a different picture, party affiliation, income. We can go on and on. And so I think you have to look at that.
There's also this whole question of how black gays and lesbians have reacted. You had Wanda Sykes, a comedian, come out, not only just come out, but say, hey, I'm married. I went out and I got married, yeah. And me and my wife are really angry right now. Corey, there are a lot of black gay and lesbian groups getting ready to march here this coming weekend. Is there anything in Atlanta? Have you heard of any black gay and lesbian groups kind of gearing up to march, or what has been the relationship between, you know, the black, I guess for lack of better words, the black straight community, the black gay community, and the white gay community?
Well, there in Atlanta and most any other city, there has been a clear distinction between the black gay community and the white gay community. In Atlanta in particular, socially and sort of thematically, it is known not only, of course, as the black mecca for opportunity, jobs, et cetera, but it's a mecca for black gays. But when you talk about political activism, when you talk about sort of economic opportunities, advancement, the way gays kind of affect for the better a particular community, the white gay community here in Atlanta is much more established, much more higher earning, much more politically visible and active. It's not to say that black gays aren't, but it reflects this schism in the black community through age, through income, through religion, as was just said. But really, you know, the broader black community still struggling with how they want to address homosexuality. And here, of course, we're in the Bible Belt. And so the other countervailing force is the strong churches that in some cases are fairly opposed to this. So I think you are seeing black gays standing up and speaking out. I think this is a sort of singular opportunity for members of the black community to do some internal work and really start looking inside themselves about where they want to be on this issue. Does it come down to a civil rights issue? Does it come down to simply addressing the homophobia in the black community? This is, by the way, the state that voted to ban through a vote, a constitutional amendment that banned gay marriage a couple of years ago. And it rode largely on the backs of black evangelicals who supported the ban itself. I will say one thing I think is interesting. To me, it's interesting that this is the first time that Republicans and conservatives overall have actually tapped black antipathy or opposition to homosexuality for their own political purposes. And I think it's interesting that they did it here when in years past, and even in this election year with McCain, Republicans have steadfastly sort of written off or not campaigned for black votes. But they did it here. It's quite interesting.
Dominique, from your position as someone who is in the community, who is a journalist, who listens to people all the time, where do you think things are going to go from here in terms of a conversation about the intersection of civil rights, race, and sexual orientation? Do you think that there's going to be more openness over time?
I think so. I've seen it over the years, you know, over the past decade, I can see a change. I think that it should be noted that most black progressives in California were busy electing a president. Prop 8 was not at the top of their agenda. And so I believe that if this same proposition were put to a vote in 2 months, when there wasn't such a crowded ballot, you would see a different result. And I think that this conversation is ongoing. I think it will continue to open up more. But I also think the results of this particular initiative in this particular state at this particular time are deceptive.
All right. I want to quickly hit one more issue, which is that this week a federal judge ruled that 5 Algerian men were held illegally at Guantanamo Bay prison camp. And he ordered the release of the detainees. They'd been there for almost 7 years. The same group of men won a Supreme Court ruling, said they had the right to seek release. Do you think that President Obama, and I'll start with you, Corey Dade, is going to face There are all signs that Eric Holder, the man he's tapped to be AG, and that the Obama administration will reassess Guantanamo, which already had faced, a severe rebuke from the Supreme Court, or rather, you know, the administration had for its policies towards this detainment center, this detention center. Do you think that the Obama administration will start getting the label that it could be too soft on terrorism, as we see some critics already trying to do?
Well, I think he will fight that that label, as it were, throughout, and especially as he figures out what timeline he's going to commit to redeployment of troops out of Iraq. So I think that will be something that he's going to persistently battle against. I think we need to remember that this was one of the executive orders that Obama has said that he will put forth when he takes office, which is to say shutting Guantanamo. So the issue may be moot after that point. I think it's interesting if he backs off of that or if he hesitates, then I think we in the media need to question kind of what's going on there. I think what's interesting, though, is the judge in this case that actually ordered the release of these 5 men is the same judge who was appointed by President Bush in 2005 and said these men had no habeas corpus rights. And it was, you know, perceived that he would be sympathetic to the government's case. So I think as far as political cover, no matter what sort of soft on terrorism criticism that President Obama may get, you know, internally, they can look at, you know, the fact that a Bush appointed federal judge actually gave them the political cover to close Guantanamo if they decide to.
Dominique, does this ever come up at all when you talk to people about issues that they care about? Or is this totally back burner given what's going on with the economy?
It does come up because people are concerned about the rights of people in the prison system here and internationally, how prisoners are treated, and are we seeing a deterioration of our rights under the Constitution of the United States? And I think even though you can say, well, these are enemy combatants or they're terrorists, at a certain point it comes down to people being detained, and are we going to respect international laws? Are we going to respect our own Constitution? So I think, yes, it is a concern.
Dominique, it's been great to have you on, and Corey, great to have you back on.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We've been speaking with Corey Dade, Atlanta correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. He joined us from Georgia Public Broadcasting. And Dominique DePrima, producer and host of the show The Front Page on KJLH in Los Angeles. She joined me here at NPR West. And let's step away from the headlines for a second and get real. We are all trying to make a way. Some of us have jobs with a bit of security. Others of us just got let go. And we have been asking people who have been laid off to contact us online. News and Notes, we really want to hear your story. People have already sent in some amazing stories. You can find out more about what we're looking for, which is just really some of you, some of your experiences at nprnewsandviews.org.